Good morning, everyone, and welcome to FYI. I am Andrea Conway, and I am here with my husband, Dr. Jimmy Conway.
Hello, everyone.
And our good friend, Randy Titone.
Good morning.
And we are Plant-Based OKC. If you haven't heard us before, we are on here every fourth Tuesday of the month. And we like to talk about the healthiest way to eat, which is a whole food, plant-based diet. And we started down this...
No meat?
No meat.
No cheese?
No dairy. No eggs.
Wow.
No kidding.
There's nothing what's left.
Vegetables.
The rainbow. The rainbow of foods. So we advocate eating a whole food, plant-based diet, which means eating... vegetables, fruits, grains, whole grains, beans, seeds, and nuts.
In their unprocessed form.
Yes. And we started down this path about 7.5 years ago, and we started studying the reason behind why this way of eating prevents and reverses chronic disease. And so we decided to share our story, and it's become a mission outreach for us to provide this information to the public. And everything we do free of charge and volunteer our time to spread this information, which we think is so vital that everyone needs to have access to it. So that's why we come here on the fourth Tuesday to discuss this with you. We have a Facebook page called Plant-Based OKC, so if you're on the computer and on Facebook, please look us up. And then we have a website, plantbasedokc.com, where we list our wellness events, and we hold monthly seminars where we spend 2.5 hours going over the science behind what we do, what we advocate, and these meetings are free of charge, so we would love to have you attend. If you get on our website, you can RSVP for this event. We hold them at Community Hospital, which is on the south side of Oklahoma City, Southwest 89th and May. And these are on usually a Saturday at noon, and you get a plant-based meal served for free. And some great information. So if you're interested, please go to our website and sign up. Our next event is March 25th, and I still have some openings for that. And then on the first Monday of every month, we hold a support group meeting where it's just an informal time for those that have maybe started down this path or want more information, can get together and ask us questions. And so that meeting is at Rococo Restaurant in North Park Mall, and we have a separate room for us there each month, and we have quite a crowd that joins us, and Rococo provides a plant-based menu for us to order from if you wish, but ordering dinner is not necessary. You can just come and join the group and for some discussion. And then, of course, we're here. On the fourth Tuesday. So we posted on our Facebook page that we would be here, and we asked our followers if they had any questions, and we've got some questions we're going to start with this morning. But if you are listening and you have any questions yourself, please feel free. We would love to hear from you at 672-1220, so we can always take your call on the air. But we're going to answer some questions, start off with some from our followers on Facebook. So I'm going to read this, and then we'll get started on this subject. So this is from one of our followers named Leslie. She says, if you can talk about this on the radio, that'd be great. I'm reading Dr. Greger's book, How Not to Die, especially focusing on the chapter about diabetes. My husband's sugar has been going up over the last year or two. Most recently, he had a knee replacement, and his sugar was 134 just before surgery, and that was after fasting for 9 hours. We follow a plant-based diet. We don't follow the USDA recommendations closely when it comes to number of calories or amount of fat. From what I'm reading, it sounds like the amount of fat in the diet is more important even than sugar or carbs. And then there's exercise. What are some of the biggest misconceptions about diabetes and diet? We want to fix this problem. So I'm going to turn that kind of over to Dr. Conway to start addressing some of these?
Blood sugar is a symptom of the disease. So type 2 diabetes is what I assume she's referring to. Type 1 is different, but type 2 diabetes is primarily a fat storage problem. So people that develop type 2 diabetes have too much fat inside their muscle cells, inside the cells of their body, and it doesn't allow the insulin in to work to lower, to utilize glucose, which is what most of the cells in our body run on. And as a result, the glucose level in the blood goes up. But the glucose is a symptom of the disease and not actually the disease itself. And in terms of nutrients, it seems that more than likely the most closely correlated nutrient intake with risk of type 2 diabetes is actually animal protein intake. But it also has to do with dietary fat. So even on a plant-based diet, you can eat too much fat, and if you have type 2 diabetes, you're going to have increased blood sugars because the fat gets stored in the cells. The fat we eat is the fat we wear. For every 100 grams of fat we eat, we store 97. So in another way of saying that is we store 97% of the fat we eat.
And I want to point out, too, that, yes, I mean, there's a little bit of fat even in all whole plant foods.
Correct.
But there's also lots of fiber and other nutrients in whole plant foods that help that fat absorb maybe a little differently. I find in a lot of situations where, you know, someone might tell me, well, we eat a plant-based diet and... You know, when you really dig down to it, you know, what are they eating that is plant-based? Are they truly eating whole plant foods, or are they eating processed plant foods?
Plant foods are not
ideal. Those are not health foods. And they, if you read the labels on these processed plant foods, they can have a lot of added fat from things like canola oil and palm oil and
coconut oil.
I mean, you name it. And those oils are in those processed foods, which is the oil that's getting deposited in there.
Correct. Cells. And the other thing you have to know about processed food on the food label, they list grams of fat based on serving size. And so if it's a half gram or less of fat, they can list it as zero. That does not mean there's no fat in what you're eating.
And you know what? What I tell people is I don't really care what that says. Like, I don't care that it says there's 5 grams of fat per serving. I want to know what are the ingredients in that product and where is that fat coming from? Because there are, you know, there are a few crackers, say, that I eat that it might say it has 2 or 3 grams of fat per serving, but when I look at the ingredients, that fat is coming from
seeds,
you know, sesame seeds and pumpkin seeds and flax seed and those kind of things, whereas it's not coming from
processed oil being added.
Yes, soybean oil, canola oil, palm oil, coconut oil, all those kind of things. So I'm really more interested in what are the ingredients in a product versus what that label, I think that label can be very deceiving.
It can be, and they do it on purpose. And so you have to look in the ingredients, and if it's listed in the ingredients as added oil or any type of hydrogenated or partially hydrogenated oil, you want to run from that stuff.
Right.
But that is partially hydrogenated oil is the worst thing that you can put in your body. And I mean, like at our hospital, we have little tubs of peanut butter, and it has hydrogenated oil in it. But if you look at the serving amount, it's small enough that they can list that as zero. From a fat standpoint.
Yeah.
Zero, you know, trans fat. But if it says partially hydrogenated, that is a trans fat by definition.
And just so everyone knows, all of the original versions of whether it's Jiffy, Skippy, Peter Pan, I'm sure there's many other brands, but all of those peanut butters are peanuts, sugar, and
hydrogenated
vegetable oil. So I know that's off the subject a little bit, but it just goes to show you where a processed food that you might think, you know, is just nothing but, you know, peanuts. It's peanut butter. How bad can that be? Well, it actually can be bad. So when I'm buying peanut butter, I want to make sure the ingredient list says peanuts and salt, period. No sugar, no oil.
Well, okay. This is a good example of what we've heard several of the scientists and several of the nutritionists say: never believe anything on the front of the label.
Correct.
When it says fat-free.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, or all natural, both of those things are meaningless on the front of the label.
Yeah, it all is in the ingredient list.
Right.
I mean, you really, really have to follow that. So, you know, I think to back to
the question
of diabetes.
Right. And so for the treatment of diabetes, you want to be a low-fat diet. I mean, you know, the doctor from Duke University back in the 30s cured people of type 2 diabetes on a white rice and fruit diet. His name's
what?
Walter Kettner.
White rice and fruit? That's got
white
sugar
rice
in it.
White rice and fruit.
That's crazy.
Cured people of diabetes. But the rice is very low fat, and obviously the fruit is too.
So basically boiled down to a no-fat diet.
Extremely low-fat diet. There's a little bit of fat in rice, but not enough to really worry about. So you really, if you have type 2 diabetes, you really want to watch your fat intake, and I mean fat of any type. So even if it's whole food fat, you've got to significantly limit that. And the exercise part is crucial in that you've got to burn that fat in the muscle cells. And the only way you're going to do that is if you do very moderate level exercise for a long time. So you need to exercise an hour a day at a level where you can carry on a conversation with a person.
And you don't have to do all that hour at one time, do you?
No, you don't.
So you could go walk for 20 minutes and
three times a day,
and
you'll get your hour in. And it doesn't need to be vigorous or rigorous exercise. It just needs to be consistent, and you can completely reverse type 2 diabetes.
So what is a normal blood sugar level?
It's below 100.
One of the things that I gleaned from her message, and I wasn't certain if when she said that around the time of his surgery that his blood sugar went up. Am I mistaken that many times when patients have had surgery that they do require a little bit of insulin, even if they're not diabetic, because their sugars go up?
Correct. The stress of the surgery can cause your sugar to go up, even if you're not diabetic,
actually. Right.
So it's kind of like a normal response.
Well, and I want to make sure that we talk a little bit about, you know, he may not have been diagnosed with diabetes. He just had an elevated blood sugar, and maybe that's been a, you know, something they've, you know, randomly had some higher blood sugar labs run. But you don't all of a sudden one day wake up with diabetes. I mean, I think that is such a misconception, and that people say, all of a sudden I have diabetes. Well, this is something that has been progressing.
Your doctor probably was warning you of for a long time.
Yes, and it's been progressing in your body for, my gosh, how many years probably before it actually...
It could be a decade or longer.
And what's happening during that time?
Well, you're having periodic episodes of hyperglycemia.
But you're damaging... But during this whole time that you may not...
Know that
you're diabetic, your liver, your pancreas.
And, you know, advanced glycation end products are some very bad acting chemicals that occur, which do a lot of damage. And if you don't know that you're diabetic and you don't know what your blood sugar is and it's running high, then you're doing damage to just about every organ in your body, including your nerves.
Well, and I think that's just why it's important, you know, that as people, you know, put on weight over, you know, maybe you were some, we were just talking about weight and, you know, being young and how you, you know, a lot of people can go about eating anything they want to eat when they're young. And then you hit, you know, your 30s and even your 40s, and all of a sudden you start putting on that weight. You can be starting to develop those pre-diabetic issues without even really knowing it.
Right. And you don't actually have to be overweight to be type 2 diabetic. I mean, there are people that are not overweight that have type 2 diabetes, but they still have a problem with fat storage. And it may not be fat around their waist or around their hips, but it's fat in the muscle. And so that, again, illustrates the necessity for somebody like that to exercise. And that exercise is powerful medicine. It's not as powerful as food. So you can't out-exercise a bad diet. But you can out-diet a bad exercise program without question.
So the priority is getting, like, obviously this gentleman's just had a knee replacement. He's not going to be able to get out and do too much exercise for, you know, a little while. But the diet portion is what he can be controlling at this point
Correct.
In time, which is very, very important.
So, and the thing about sugar, I wasn't real sure whether she meant carbohydrates or a refined sugar. So the way to go about helping diabetics, type 2 diabetics, is you don't want to have refined anything because refined sugar, refined flour is just as bad as refined sugar. I mean, it goes straight to your bloodstream. You want complex carbohydrates, and you really don't have to worry about how much complex carbohydrates you take in. You can even take in fruit and still be okay because fruit has fiber in it, and it slows the glycemic response to that fruit.
What about a baked potato?
Oh, my.
Oh, you can't have potatoes, no, can you?
Can't have potatoes. Well, actually, according to the Diabetic Association, they discourage white potato consumption. But if you're eating a low-fat diet and you're eating whole food, plant-based, you can have all the potatoes you want.
I worked with a lady one time who had type 2 diabetes and wanted, you know, to get started on a plant-based diet because her diet was so bad, and what could she eat? And when I suggested that she eat a white potato, she just couldn't believe that I would say that. But in the same breath, she had told me she'd been eating sausage biscuits for breakfast every morning, but she couldn't even fathom the thought of eating a baked potato. So it just goes to show you this whole misconception of what foods that we get stuck on that are supposedly bad for you. I mean, even white rice, I mean, they, you know, yes, I would certainly rather have a brown rice or a wild rice or, you know, something more whole grain than a white rice, but there's been many times we've, you know, had white rice and I don't worry about it.
I'd rather have white rice than a corn dog.
Yes. You know?
Yeah, I mean, there's just...
Or some type of soda.
Exactly.
I mean, that to me is still a relatively whole food. I mean, you can still tell what it is.
Sure.
I mean, it's still... The only ingredient is rice.
Right. I mean, until recently, most of the world's population lived on white rice.
Right.
And didn't have a problem with obesity or with diabetes or any of those problems. Unfortunately now, and I'm speaking primarily of the Asian population, because they've increased their consumption of meat. And what's really interesting about white rice is meat tends to make white rice very hyperglycemic, whereas if it's not in the presence of animal protein, it's not as hyperglycemic. And that's some just very recent research that's been done where they looked at people who ate white rice with animal protein versus people that ate white rice with vegetables, and their glycemic response was entirely different.
Well, and that would make sense in those populations of the world that eat white rice and seem to be...
And a lot of it.
Very, very healthy, yes.
Well, unfortunately, China's having an explosion of all kinds of Western diseases because now it's a status symbol in China to eat meat.
Sure. Well, and I think Okinawa, Japan, which Correct. Has been ranked as a blue zone where people living over 100, centenarians, people living over 100 more than anywhere else, also has one of the highest rising heart disease rates because of the Western diet coming in.
Okinawa is an extremely interesting island in that it offers a great study on diet, in that the elderly Okinawans who eat their traditional diet live well into their hundreds, very active. But since 1945, Okinawa has now the highest per capita rate of fast food restaurants of any place on the face of this earth.
Wow.
It has to do with our influence
sure.
on that island.
Sure.
And so the people born after 1945 are dropping dead like flies from cardiovascular problems that the elderly people don't seem to have any problem with.
Sure.
And they're all the same genetics. So it's not genetic. It's what you put in your mouth. And, you know, recently a celebrity had a heart
attack.
Yeah,
I wanted to talk about that. Many of you may have heard the gentleman that's on The Biggest Loser that has been on there for years. His name is Bob Harper. He big fitness guru, very thin man, very athletic, works out all the time. At 51 years old, had a pretty major heart attack the other day.
Well,
while he was exercising.
Yes, while he was exercising. And if there hadn't been a physician at the facility, he probably wouldn't have made it.
Yeah.
Because they actually had to defibrillate him. And of course, he says it's genetic, and he is absolutely wrong.
Right.
It is. I mean, you know, genes load the gun, but your diet and lifestyle pull the trigger, and his diet and lifestyle pulled that trigger. And as we were saying earlier, you cannot out-exercise a bad diet, and he is living proof. I don't know how bad a diet he was. I would suppose that comparing his diet to, you know, the standard American diet most people eat, I bet you his diet was a lot healthier.
But it has to do with
the animal protein intake that increases your risk of heart disease. Not just dietary fat.
Well, and he may be one of those, like, it'd be interesting to know what his cholesterol level was. I mean, even though he was very thin and worked out, you know, if he still had a, you know, and I want to say, you know, in America, 200 is the threshold for, you know, anything over that. So he could have, you know.
He could have been at 200.
He could have been at 200 or 190, and they wouldn't say his cholesterol
right.
was high. When he, you know.
He could have been at 154.
But
like
he
the gentleman in Esselstyn's book who had a heart attack.
But had a very, probably a high LDL.
We don't know, but we do know his total cholesterol was 154 and he had a massive heart attack, which he completely reversed going on a whole food plant-based diet, proven by arteriogram 2.5 years later.
So genetically, you can certainly be predisposed to having
sure.
heart disease, high triglycerides, high cholesterol, all those things. So you could say genetics caused that. So in a way, that could be a true statement, but it doesn't have to be your fate.
It doesn't.
I mean, I think that's the key. Yes, genetically, you may be predisposed to having
genetically, I was.
Breast cancer.
Sure.
You know, any
sure.
kind of cancer or heart disease or so on. But, you know, what is it that all those people have in common?
Speaking of breast cancer, just this morning I was reading about BRCA1 and BRCA2. So these are genes that are in present that's they reduce the risk of breast cancer. But there are certain mutations that occur to the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes. And if you have mutations on both of those genes, your risk of breast cancer approaches 90%. But going on to a whole food plant-based diet, adding lots of soy, increased the gene activity to reduce the risk of breast cancer 78%.
Soy? You could eat soy
if you have
breast cancer? Or if you have the genetic predisposition. Well, in general, you know, people always ask me, well, what's a good substitute for soy? because I don't want to intake any soy. So let's talk
about
that.
Soy has a bad rap because of phytoestrogens, meaning plant estrogens are. And where soy got a bad rap was in the early rat studies, because rats, you feed a rat soy and it increases estrogen production. But humans have alpha and beta estrogen receptors, and some tissues have more of one versus the other. The breast seems to have both, and soy preferentially attaches to the beta receptor, which actually has an anti-estrogen effect. So by increasing intake of soy, a woman significantly decreases her risk of breast and ovarian cancer.
I think that's fascinating. And it's, you know.
So many times now we hear people saying, I can't have soy, I can't have soy. And I always think, yeah, you can't have those soy-based fake chicken nuggets is what you can't
have.
Yeah,
and right. You know, certainly I want to stay away from, they do a lot of highly processed
food-like
substances that I would call that have, you know, textured soy protein and soy protein isolates and all these things. And that, you know, that's not what we're talking about. And, you know, we drink a soy milk where the only ingredients are soybeans and water.
Right.
We eat tofu, which is a fermented soybean. We eat tempeh, which is even less processed than tofu, that can make a great tacos and meatloaf and all kinds of things out mm-hmm. of tempeh. Those are the kind of soy products that we're talking about.
Edamame, which is
edamame is whole soybean, you know.
Right.
You know, it's funny, I really don't know that people attribute edamame, which they eat in Asian restaurants all the time,
with being soy.
I really don't.
Yes. Well, let's don't tell anybody.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're going to take a short break here for a little bit. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some autoimmune diseases. We are Plant-Based OKC and here to answer your questions regarding a whole food plant-based diet. So again, if you are listening and you have a question you want to ask us while we're on the air, 672-1220, please feel free to call us. But we asked our followers if they had any questions for us to answer on the air, and we just got done talking about diabetes and some other things. And another person asked that their question is, I've recently been diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. Can a plant-based diet help me control this? And it's weird. I say weird, it's probably pretty normal, but I've been approached in the last couple months by at least 6 women who have been diagnosed with either rheumatoid arthritis, fibromyalgia, Hashimoto's disease, and they're all in their late 30s, early 40s. I mean, I feel like that's a pretty young population to be getting the, and those are all autoimmune diseases.
Correct.
So let's.
I don't know if fibromyalgia actually would be classified as autoimmune, but it's definitely an inflammatory.
It definitely seems to come along with the rheumatoid arthritis and all that.
It's also a diagnosis of exclusion, yeah. Too. I mean,
you're certainly not getting any favors by getting diagnosed with fibromyalgia.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, I see a lot of women, especially, and why women over men, I don't know, that have fibromyalgia. But, so it's an inflammatory process. Autoimmune diseases are inflammatory processes. And I think most of the autoimmune diseases start in the gut, and maybe even fibromyalgia, in that we develop what has been referred to as a leaky gut. And women especially, because they eat more chicken, being told that chicken is a healthy alternative.
Right.
You cannot get chicken in the United States that hasn't been exposed to antibiotics. And there are antibiotics everywhere. It's in our water. It's in the soil. It's everywhere. But a large portion of antibiotic use is in animal agriculture, over 80%. And so when you're eating this stuff, you're killing off the good bacteria in your intestines and it allows for overgrowth of bad bacteria, and then the junctions that kind of bind the cells together in the intestines are called tight junctions, become not so tight, and that allows toxins to leak in directly into the bloodstream, and that causes lots of problems. A lot of the autoimmune diseases are associated with dairy intake as well, for a number of different reasons. And so, yes, a whole food plant-based diet can be used to completely control the symptoms of most autoimmune diseases. Now, that said, if you have rheumatoid arthritis, or you have psoriatic arthritis, or you have lupus that has done joint destruction because of the arthritis, mm-hmm. you're not going to be able to magically grow new joints, but you can stop the process.
Stop the progression.
Stop mm-hmm. the progression.
Well, there's a physician that we've met. Her name is Dr. Brooke Goldner. So if you're on the internet or on Facebook even, you can follow her. She was diagnosed with stage 4 lupus.
Stage 4 kidney disease
due to lupus
at the age of 16.
Yes.
And was told she would not be alive in a short period of time.
Well, she's in her 30s and has had 2 children and has no signs in her blood work of ever having had lupus. She's doing great, and she did this by going on a whole food plant-based diet in her early 20s. And she now talks about, she has a book called Goodbye Lupus, which is a very short book, easy to read. You can get it on Amazon. She's also very accessible on Facebook if you reach out to her, or if you email her, she's very good about getting back with you. But clearly lupus is another autoimmune disease. So, I mean, kind of the same path that she took, you can reverse your autoimmune disease by that. And one of the things that she recommends are green smoothies. And a part of that, I think, more than anything, and what I refer to it as, is crowding out. Even if you don't completely go on a whole food plant-based diet, what she's found with her patients that have these morning green smoothies are flooding their body with such nutrients, and that is replacing some other meal that they may have had full of animal protein, that they are even getting relief with just that amount of change in their diet. And when I say a green smoothie, I'm talking, like, my rule is about 25% fruit and 75% greens. And I mean, lots and lots of green leafies like spinach and kale or whatever you can get your hands on, and packing that into a blender and then drinking, like, I mean, my smoothies are at least, what, 30 ounces probably?
Probably.
You know, and I get asked all the time, what's a smoothie recipe? And I tell people, you don't need a recipe. Whatever you got in the freezer, like frozen pineapple, frozen banana, frozen peaches, fresh strawberries, fresh blueberry, anything you got, 25%.
Or frozen strawberries, or frozen blueberries.
Between frozen and fresh, whatever you got works. But you want to pack in as many green leafy vegetables in that as you can. And it's probably more green leafies than a lot of people get on a regular basis. And I think that's why that has shown in when she's worked with patients to make a significant difference.
Well, one of the things that doing a smoothie does is it breaks down the cell wall of the green leafies and allows more of the nutrients to actually be absorbed. And so by doing a smoothie, you significantly increase your nutrient absorption versus if you ate that. So I do both. I mean, I make a green smoothie, but also usually have a salad for lunch.
Sure.
Well, I'm chewing that salad, but there are some people that recommend doing what's called a blended salad. And I would refer to that more as a roughy, as opposed to a smoothie.
But it's also a way to eat, be able to eat a lot more. I mean, it takes right. you a good 45 Ooh. Minutes to eat the salads I make for you in the morning because there's right. just
I get tired of chewing.
So much of it. Whereas right. when you do a smoothie or a roughie, it's broken down somewhat for you already. So you're able to consume a lot more of that. And I tell people to take, you know, I don't like people to get those smoothies and just, you know, down them all at once. I mean, if you can, I mean, I take a good 45 minutes. When you think about how much food is in that smoothie you're consuming, trying to, you know, gradually get that in your body is best. And you'll feel fuller longer as well.
For people like me that used to drink a smoothie and put ice cream and those things in it like that, one of the really nice things that I tell people to do now is if you really like a smoothie kind of thick and, you know, kind mm-hmm. of milkshakey mm-hmm. a little bit, is an avocado. Really makes a smoothie, and you can just use half of an avocado, but it really makes it creamy and really nice. And then if I want to even thicken it up even further, I'll just stick some raw oats in there, and that yes. makes it really nice. Yes. Uh-huh. And then when you dump the, I use frozen bananas, and then I'll put a little bit more ice, so it's really cold and it's really thick. And
yeah, I always like to use some kind of frozen fruit because yes. I do like mine to be
really cold.
Cold.
Yes.
So frozen pineapple, frozen bananas certainly make it creamier.
Yes.
And then I use that as a way to get my ground flax meal in, which also will help thicken it up some.
Sure.
And so you really, that ground flax is important for the anti-inflammatory aspects of getting your, you know, omega-3 fatty acids.
Your omega-3s and also your dietary lignans, because mm-hmm. flax and sesame have the highest content of dietary lignans. These are compounds. These are phytoestrogen compounds that don't have estrogen activity, but they bind to abnormal cells and tell your immune system come in and take them out. And it's estimated that we all have cancer cells in our body all the time, and it's whether or not you feed or fight that cancer, and flax is a cancer-fighting machine.
So I tell people to try and get 2 tablespoons of flax in their diet every day, and whether you put that in your smoothie. Randy was just talking about you might want to talk about your breakfast cereal. It's delicious, and you get your ground flax in that.
Right. I'm a really strong creature of habit, and so I eat the same thing.
That's an understatement.
It is. So for people who don't know me, I had a sausage egg McMuffin every day for at least 10 years. It was really closer to 15 years, and a large Dr. Pepper every morning before changing my lifestyle. So now I go and I buy these 4 cereals, so to speak, and I get a big Tupperware container and I measure it out in there, and it's raw oats, not the quick oats, but just old-fashioned oats, Uncle Sam's wheat flakes, Kashi 7-grain, and if you can't find that, grape nuts work fine, and then just shredded wheat, and there's no added sugar in any of these. And so I mix all that up in the Tupperware container, and then I take a half of cup of that, a scoop of that. I sprinkle some cinnamon on it. I take a small handful of walnuts, 2 tablespoons of my ground flaxseed, and I keep mine in the freezer, and I keep it in an airtight container because
oxidize if you keep it out on the counter. So we do keep ours in the refrigerator too. So.
And then I use frozen blueberries and usually a fresh banana, and then a little bit of almond milk. And so it's almost like a granola. It's not more like a cereal, but I tell you, I was just telling Dr. Conway and Andrea during the break that I crave this every single morning. So I have it without fail every morning.
Well, and because you've made that up ahead of time, and you have it, and you can scoop all that together
right.
in a bowl. And, you know, I just really advocate people, you know, doing things like that and being prepared to make things easy on yourself so
right.
that, you know, you're not making bad choices. You're making these good choices. Even when it comes to, you know, smoothies, if it's easier for you because you have to get ready in the, you know, you're going out the door in the morning for work, that you measure out baggies full of you know, frozen banana, frozen pineapple, frozen blueberries, whatever it is you want, and you measure those out in baggies so you can throw that in your Ninja or your Vitamix along with your you know, handfuls of greens, and you're ready to go. Just having that available and easily accessible is just really key to the success of eating whole foods, because unfortunately you can't go through a drive-thru and get a big, you know, kale smoothie or even, you know, a bowl of cereal like you're talking about. I mean, it's just hopefully someday that will change and those things will be available the more, you know, people really understand how diet impacts their life and their the diseases that you get, and that restaurants will become more adaptable to these foods that we're advocating.
Two things that come to mind. Number one is that I freeze my greens. If I've had fresh spinach and I don't think I'm going to get to it in time, then I'll put it in a baggie and put it in the freezer.
Perfect.
And then it adds to, you know, instead of needing the ice.
Yes.
And then, you know, when you talk about that there's not options at restaurants now, I always think about gluten. There's a big gluten and anti-gluten
right.
kind of push.
Everybody
right
wants
now.
To be gluten-free.
And so I always say, how did that start? It started by one or two people going in a restaurant and saying, do you have any gluten-free options, or do you have a gluten-free menu? And so I tell people, when you go in a restaurant now, you need to ask them, do you have any plant-based vegan options? Because the more people that go in a restaurant and ask, the more likely they are to add them right. to the menu.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And certainly in restaurants, I tell people, you know, we eat out occasionally and you can make things work at restaurants. So don't think that you could, you know, you'll never be able to find something to eat. I mean, steakhouses even have, you know, baked potatoes, sweet potatoes, grilled vegetables, all those things. You are going to get added sugar, fat, and salt anytime you eat out. So that's why I'm really strict about restricting all oil and added fat like that, added oil at home, so that when we do eat out and know we are going to get some oil occasionally, it's not as bad.
No.
But certainly we wish there was, you know, a lot of other oil-free, plant-based options out there. But
right it's coming.
Now,
it is
there's
coming.
Not, but I do think I see it in the future, you know. One of the things I want to talk about real quick while we have a few minutes here is sugar, because we just had a big seminar on this last Saturday. And we get always asked about sugar, and people know they shouldn't eat refined sugar or high fructose corn syrup, but we get asked about stevia because stevia is from a plant, and it's natural. And so why is that harmful, and can they eat that?
It's actually very highly processed.
Well, and it is a, quote, zero-calorie sweetener.
It is.
But let's talk about how those zero-calorie, whether it's aspartame or it's stevia.
Well, of the two,
or Splenda.
Aspartame, I would not ever stick in
right,
my body.
Right.
aspartame is a neurotoxin that is toxic to the bacteria in your intestines. Stevia, on the other hand, is a chemical that comes from a plant indigenous to South America. It is highly processed, and the indigenous people of that area, basically there's a lot of concern over whether or not it's kind of like forced slave labor for them to harvest these plants. Besides that fact, stevia is one of the sweetest compounds that has ever been created. And, you know, we are neurologically wired to get sweet, because that's what, you know, our ancestors got from fruit. And that would power you because of the
energy
from the glucose.
Mm-hmm.
As the fructose is broken down in the fruit. Fructose is the sugar that's primarily in fruit. But in the natural form, fructose is not harmful. In the natural form in terms of
fruit.
There's fiber associated with that fruit that also is beneficial. And so they've actually done studies where they fed people fruit and see how much they can eat and still be healthy, and essentially you can
there
eat.
There was no threshold.
There's no threshold. You can eat all you want.
Well, what's interesting is, so two men recently have asked me about consuming stevia and is that bad and can they do it? And both I've found out after asking them many questions were putting 6 to 10 packets of stevia in their morning cereal.
Oh my gosh.
And so I just tried to point out that that just goes to show you how incredibly sweet that you're adding more and more because it's just you can't get enough sweetness. I mean, it's creating you to need even more and more sweet.
Correct. It does.
And so I just told them to start, you know, backing off to just try to go down to 4 packets and to 2 packets and to try to get to nothing. And I said, you know, for me, eating a banana is just like eating pure sugar.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of people, when they will eat the, you know, when they go from eating these 6 packets of stevia to maybe trying a morning smoothie, they think it's the most bland, you know, awfulest thing they've ever had because they are so used to this inflated sense of sweetness, I guess. I mean, it's...
Well, the potentially really harmful part of that is that the tip of your tongue is wired to your brain, so that really sweet stuff hits the mouth, tells your brain not to expect sugar. Well, stevia doesn't have calories, so what does the brain do? The brain tells the pancreas to start pumping out insulin.
Sure.
So you're eating a stevia that doesn't have a significant glucose load. Now, you may have some glucose with what you're eating it with.
Right.
But you tend, because especially if you're doing 10 packets or 6 packets or whatever, where it's really, really sweet, your pancreas is going to secrete a bunch of insulin. So then you're going to become hypoglycemic
right.
and eat
an
more.
Hour or two later,
and
then that's
more.
Going to drive your hunger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that just fuels this insatiable kind of appetite.
Right.
So when I switched to this eating and I went to Starbucks mm-hmm. for a soy latte, when I first started going, I would take one packet of the sugar in the raw, and I would put it in there. And that was fine. Then I slowly thought, well, I don't need that much. And I went to a half a packet. Then I went to nothing. And then it got to where the soy latte on its own was too sweet. So you told me about if you add a shot of espresso.
To cut back on
the volume of the sweetened
milk.
And so I don't have them often, but when I do have them there, that's how I have them now. Because
oh, absolutely.
It's gotten that it's...
Well, I was worse. I started with I needed 2 packets of sugar in the raw in the soy milk latte.
Right.
In order for it to be sweet enough. And then I went to 1 packet. And now it's all I can do sometimes to get that, you know, sometimes you want to go somewhere and be able to have a coffee to go. And so that's the only place I like milk in my coffee. So their soy milk has sugar added to it, where the soy milk we have at home does not. But Starbucks soy milk does have sugar, and it's incredibly sweet to us now because we're so accustomed to not adding sugar to our diet. And it's amazing how your receptors will reset.
Oh, yes, in a short period of time.
You know, so I just really encourage those people to start cutting back because
cold turkey.
Yeah.
I mean, this cutting back stuff. Because your neuroreceptors will reset, they do it a lot faster
if you
go cold turkey.
I understand, and I do encourage that. Well, we are running out of time, and so before we sign off here, I do want to make sure everyone got our information. We are Plant-Based OKC, and you can follow us on Facebook. And on that Facebook page, you know, I post information like being on here today. We post information about our event at Rococo Restaurant at North Park Mall. I post recipes, smoothie ideas, and all kinds of stuff. When a holiday's coming up, I try to give ideas of how to cook and what things to do. So if you can follow us on Facebook, please do.
Rococo is next Monday.
Rococo is next Monday.
And we will not, Andrew and myself will not be there. Randy will have to manage himself. Let me tell you.
Randy, our plant-based evangelist, is going to be there to
sing for you.
Exactly.
And dance.
So March.
Hopefully he can dance better than he can sing.
Hey.
That is March the 6th,
that
I believe.
Right.
It's
correct.
The first Monday of March, where that'll be at Rococo North Park Mall. So if you want to go out and have some fellowship with other plant-based eaters, please feel free to join them. Our next event at Community Hospital is March 25th at noon. Please go to plantbasedokc.com to sign up. Also at Plant-Based OKC, a recorded version of this radio show on all of our radio shows are now on our website. So if you listened today and liked what you heard and want to share that with someone else, please direct them to plantbasedokc.com to listen to our show.
Absolutely. Well, I think, oh, one other thing that we have forgotten to talk about is the release of our movie.
Oh, yes.
So, we are in a full feature documentary called Eating You Alive, and I've started bragging and saying that Andrea is the star of the documentary, which is a little bit of a stretch,
yes,
but it sounds good anyway.
It's not much a stretch for me.
No, it's not at all. That's exactly right. So Dr. Conway's featured, his story is featured in there as well. And so you can find that documentary on, you can view it now at eatingyoualive.com. Then you click on watch. You can either buy the digital version or you can rent the digital version, or you can buy the DVD. And the DVDs we are expecting to be delivered anytime. But you can, if you're anxious like me and you're impatient, you can buy the digital download that you can watch on your computer or iPad or wherever. So that's, again, that's eatingyoualive.com. And I always tell people it has Samuel L. Jackson in it, so you know it's good. So.
It is really, really good. We did a premiere and everyone really enjoyed it. Well, I think
okay.
That's all we have for today.
Absolutely.
So, shout out to Kathy, who used to come on and do this show with us. We miss you, but we are here to help people live life on purpose and with purpose.
Amen.